Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The biggest impediment to electric cars taking over from their gas-guzzling counterparts is that they don't go very far before they run out of juice. 100 k's is about the limit at present. They also have to lug around great big batteries, which themselves aren't that eco-friendly and further hamper efficiency. That's where Auckland University's commercial arm, UniServices, is working on a project which will charge cars without having to plug them in, or even stop moving. Here to discuss what he calls induction power transfer, but what I prefer to call white man's magic, is UniServices CEO, Peter Lee.
Peter, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, what is the history of this charging technology? The idea itself isn't new, is it?
It goes a long way back. A man named Faraday, maybe many of you remember that from your physics classes, or who found when you wave a piece of wire through a magnetic field, such as the Earth, it develops an electric charge. So you can create electricity or electric movement in a wire by a fluctuating magnetic field. Now, it took a long while between that observation and the practical applications of that, which started seriously about 20 years ago and very much based on research here at the University of Auckland, where we were able to apply this technology to transmit power to robots inside industrial applications, such as for making automobiles and more recently making integrated circuits and large panel TVs, which need to have very clean manufacturing conditions, and being able to move power without wires is one way of getting that.
So the power is essentially transmitted through a magnetic field?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, so you create a magnetic field, fluctuate the magnetic field, and a stationary conductor nearby will pick up power.
So
just like your toothbrush.
So does this have the application? I mean, obviously, the electric car is a very exciting application. But say in the shorter term, could we charge our cell phones by sitting in a room with something going?
Yes. So in fact, there are some devices available today which will let you charge those type of electronics without having to plug them in.
Speaking of someone who's just spent quite a lot of money rewiring the house and having an enormous number of new power points put in, have I been wasting my time?
Not at all. I still recommend the power plugs for all of those devices around the house. No, this is very much to dedicate and focus magnetic fields around very specific inductive pickups, as such as this car that we're talking about.
Now, the car requires a lot of energy to run, one would assume, so therefore it needs to recharge a lot of energy. Does having all this energy floating about in the ether, does that create issues for people?
Yes, so that's a very important part of this. I mean, well, first of all, let's put it in context. We live in a magnetic field. It's a very strong magnetic field. It's the Earth. So we've got used to, I guess, through our evolution to be quite comfortable with magnetic fields. Nevertheless, there are standards. And there's a standard that says 6.25 microtesla is the limit. So one of the challenges of being able to develop an application of inductive power for cars is to make sure that in that consumer world you are safe. And so we've done that. We have made the ability to transfer power over up to 400 millimeters absolutely safely. That is within these limits.
Was this always seen right from the beginning 20 years ago as something that could be developed commercially? Was the university in that sort of mode way back then?
We were always looking for commercial outcomes, and in those early instances we were looking for applications in industrial circumstances where you had a little bit more of a controlled environment, and so as I say, most of the manufacturing of automobiles nowadays invokes this kind of technology.
So those robots aren't plugged in, is what you're saying?
They're moving around without plugs, exactly. They can move freely and pick the power up from the ground upon which they move.
So what is UniServices and what's its relationship to the British company that's now developing the technology, Halo IPT?
Okay, so UniServices is the commercialization arm of the University of Auckland, and we look for good partnerships to benefit the commercialization of these technologies. So we discovered, or Arup discovered us. Arup is a very large engineering company based in the UK but worldwide. So we wanted somebody who knew about infrastructure, because one of the sides of this, the transmitting side of it, has to be in the road. And they also happen to have an expertise and contacts with the automobile industry. So perfect. Global infrastructure, automobiles, rang all the bells. We said, let's make a handshake. Let's make a company called Halo IPT, and let's go after this combining our resources.
So what happens if this really takes off? Will it benefit the university substantially?
Well, yes. We have a stake in this company. It's actually the majority stake right now. As time goes on, we expect to be diluted. That is, other investors will come in, attracted by the opportunity, and so our share will decrease, but our share of a larger company presumably will become more and more valuable over time. That comes back to the university. Some of it goes to the inventors, the staff who came up with these bright ideas in the first place. Some of it goes to the university continue research.
Does UniService have any number of these deals going on at any one time?
Yes. So we currently license about 25 deals every year. About five of those this year will result or have resulted in new companies. And from the university, we have generally about 100 records of invention coming at us in any particular year. So it's quite a pipeline.
Is it starting to return a good dividend, a revenue stream for the university, or are you still waiting for that one big idea that's going to take off?
We always live for the one big idea, of course. But currently, our revenues are $120 million per year. So that accounts for about half of the total research that goes on in the university. So our university is a very commercially oriented university.
I imagine with this thing, there are tasks, hurdles you'll have to clear to make it work, not least getting government and local government on board, because if you're talking about building roads that charge cars, it's government that builds roads, isn't it?
Yes. So there are two manifestations of this. One is the so-called opportunistic charge, where you will have the transmitter at where you park. So it could be at home. It's like a floor mat in your garage. It's basically what it would look like. Or at your workplace. But if you go out onto the roads, fleets of cars like cabs could be picking up electric charge while they're waiting. We have two bus systems in Europe, currently one in Turin and one in Genoa, who are using chargers buried in the road at the bus stop. So passengers get on and off, charge goes into the vehicle and it gets onto the next stop. So these are not out of the question. And we can imagine bus systems, for example, and you can think about the Northern Motorway with the bus system there, having a series of these pickups continuously distributed along the road, so the bus has to carry almost no battery.
And basically doesn't have, and it wouldn't have to stop for them. Is that
right? That's right. It would be continuously charging while you're driving.
Is that the future for you? Is a road where every square meter of the road is a charging plate, and everyone's just picking up juice?
I think it's essential for electric cars. The cost of an electric car is very high. The cost of the electricity relative to petrol is low, but the cost of the car is high because of the batteries that you have to put in it, and they're heavy. So you have to cart around this very heavy battery.
The battery is also the one place where the environmental concerns come in, isn't it?
That's right.
There are a lot of issues with disposal and some of the metals used in it and where they're manufactured and transporting them around.
So the electric car of the future with this kind of technology could be nothing more than four electric motors on each wheel and a pickup and a very small battery. The cost would come down, the weight would come down, and that's the kickoff in the curve of
That's when the efficiency goes back up as well, isn't it? If the weight comes down even further, it becomes more efficient.
Yep.
Wow.
So ideally, what happens from this point on? Where are you at now, and where do you go in the next 5 years?
Okay, so right now we're showing this week in China at the big EV electric vehicle show. We have a test units being tested right now with car manufacturers, or car manufacturers are talking about getting one. So most of the car manufacturers are now starting to test these. We think that within 18 months to 2 years, we'll have three or four demonstration sites, one in Europe, one in China, one in the US, multi-vehicle and metropolitan-wide types of demonstrations. That will be the next value uplift for us in this technology.
So what's the big thing for you personally with this? Is it because it may help curb the global warming problem? Or what's your real motivating?
Oh, I'm an engineer. I just like to see good things work. And I think this is a fantastic opportunity.
Oh, Peter, thank you very much and best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
It's Peter Lee, CEO of UniServices from Auckland University. Coming up after the break, we discuss broadcasting standards and have a night at the classic.